Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at AllPoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful collection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought to you tonight a reading list for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. And tonight with me, I have the, as per usual, fantastic Pam. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm glad to be here. It's that time of the year when we start to catch up with what's going on with life, maybe slow down a little bit, let the summer season mix in, and I am definitely feeling the frantic attempt to catch up with life. So I didn't even get to tell what this show's about. Today we're actually just kind of having an eclectic mix. It's just pretty much things that we've posted that have offered us permission in the past that we just didn't get a chance to get to on the show because we like to give time to each poet to have their work appreciated, and other ones is just carryovers from a few other shows. So it's kind of an eclectic mix, kind of like an open mic. So if anyone is listening that would love to call in and have a piece read, they can do that either through All Poetry in the LNP group, or if you're not part of the site, you can, of course, call into our show. So I'm excited about tonight, since I forgot that part. And I'm glad you're doing
very
good,
cool.
Pam. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, it should be fun.
And we also have with us Afasiana. And how are you doing tonight, my dear?
I'm well, thank you. Good to be here.
Now, what people don't know is that Faze is a complete and utter rock star. I'm pretty sure she calls him like every single show. At least she seems to be on every single one that I happen to make it onto. It's a beautiful thing to see when the other hosts call in and support each other. And I know that I've not gotten to do that quite as much as I would like as of late, but I don't think that enough appreciation is shown for both Pam and Faze, who are just always kind of there in the background helping people, lifting people up. They're just amazing people, and I'm so thankful that both of you guys are here. And finally, we have Salwa with us. And how are you doing tonight, Salwa?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hello, Victoria, Mr. Show, and hello, Pam, again. Alfazana, also Mr. Show. Sorry, just like my time. I have to get up early. I wish I have your same time zone.
No, you're great. You're great, and I get it. I have, just because of the life and the way it is, I get up at 4 o'clock on, usually on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so it doesn't matter what time zone it is. It's just ridiculously early, and that's just the way that life just kind of is sometimes. But I appreciate you getting to call in. We have definitely missed hearing your beautiful works and your beautiful voice. And Saul always has just fantastic, beautiful, supportive comments. So I am so excited to have you guys here tonight. I know that Salwa actually brought a poem, so I am going to make her start us off on the show tonight, if you're up for that, my dear.
If Alfanziana is not in a rush, that would be great. If not, I can wait. I'm going to wait for two people, poems or two, then I'm go. I don't want to be rude and read and run. But thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not in a rush. I'll be here all night.
Okay, thank you, Ian. Okay.
All right, well, with that said, Sala, take it away when you're ready.
Okay, this is actually a line from Frank's poem, "Dreams are the word that we create and the beautiful things that we define with our pure imagination." Took a line from his poem and turned it to a tribute. "Every day dreamers are born. Chaque jour des songeurs renaissent. When the mystery of dawn shines in my mind, I think of beautiful flowers there, of their softness that dries my wet tears, their scent that tenderly warms my heart, their petals that shine with my days to come. When the colors of dawn awaken me from my sleep, they dress the city with their golden splendor, they lengthen the hours with a clear whiteness, they set the wandering reflection of the lake ablaze, and they hide by mingling with the songs of the birds. Here I am standing listening to the footsteps. I breathe the fresh air before it runs away. I can see a beautiful bird plumage close by. The greenery of the trees surprise me. An hour later, I go down my way in the form."
Oh, Sala, that was a beautiful poem. And, I love that you took this off of a line from Frank, because Frank so often writes these sultry, beautiful poetry. I can't even talk tonight. Oh, my God, people. This is going to be amazing. But I love that you took him as inspiration, because he does have this Latin lover type facade that he shows the world, and this has come off as almost his delicate feminine counterpart to that. It fits so beautifully together with a lot of his work. So I'm so thankful that you brought this. Thank you, Sala. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I always think it's wonderful when poets on All Poetry are inspired by fellow poets. I think that's, you know, that's what we need to do, is be out there being inspired by each other and letting each other know that their words meant something to you, meant enough to actually write something to their words. I really like how this has a very like spiritual type feel to it, especially like in the line, "Here I am standing, listening to the footsteps. I breathe the fresh air before it runs away." There's really this meditative feel of appreciating nature in the moment. I also really like where it says that about of their softness that dries my wet tears, of their scent that tenderly warms my heart. You know, flowers are such a small thing that it's almost easy to think of them as insignificant. And yet, even if you don't think about all the things they do, such as feed bees and, you know, be part of that cycle, there is just the fact that emotionally and spiritually, their colors, their presence comforts us and moves us. And I think this is a beautiful rite, and it's very well done.
Oh, thank you so much. I love nature, so you definitely need it. So thank you.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Faith, what did you think?
I like that it shows like the different senses that can be engaged by flowers. The softness shows touch, the scent in your smell, that the petals are shining, you see that with your vision. It's like every part of you is influenced by these flowers. And I really like the line, "They dress the city with their golden splendor." You know, they're not just like a thing in themselves, which they are in a wonderful way, but they make the larger scene even better. It just, it influences everything to have that. And it does make such a big difference. I find like I notice in my city if along the sidewalks and boardways and like all of the different places, if they add flowers, it just makes everything so much cheerier in general. It makes a big difference. I think that she captured that in how all, like, every part of you is engaged by something as simple as a flower. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Those are beautiful words, Faith. Thank you so much. And I have to agree, Sola, you do such a beautiful job of capturing the nature and the nuances of life. I think what's stunning to me is the little details that you've caught in this. The mystery of dawn shines in my mind. That is a moment. That is a very specific moment. It's like the green flash in Hawaii when the sun sets. It's a very specific moment that when you blink, you almost miss it. When the colors of dawn awaken me from my sleep, that very specific moment that is so easily missed, that so many people sleep through and take for granted. Standing and listening to the footsteps, the idea of being so quiet that you hear those subtle footsteps, and that is what you pay attention to. You've caught the beauty of those finite moments. You've caught the beauty of someone sitting at the dawn, watching the world light once more from the dark blues. You've caught the ideas that are a blink of an eye, the first rays, the footsteps, the gentle tears, the scent of someone. Each of them are just so beautiful and delicate and finite, and yet they speak volumes of just how quietly, patiently, wonderfully we have to sit and think about all of this to get to see the beauty of this moment. I think you just did a really, really stunning job with this one.
Thank you so much. Because truly, I love nature. So, and look at the just for a second. Look at the prompt. That's a real picture I took. That in the dawn. Like if you see the color, that's truly a picture I took. So I just love nature. So thank you. You made my night. Thank you.
I think that's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad that you're back, because we've definitely missed you on the show, and you really do have just a beautiful way of capturing your words and capturing moments that I envy at. So I'm just so thankful you're here and thankful that you're back with us.
Thank you so much. I am so happy I'm here too.
All right, now we've got two poems from Faze, and I'm now intent upon getting both of them in here. So we will start off with the not-so-sad one. And Faze, when you are ready, you go ahead and take this away.
Okay. Sweet Stillness by Faziana. Whispering mist tickles my ears, and trickling, trickling stream assuages subconscious fears. The roar of rapids cascading softens as water slows, bathing frogs heard serenading. Mossy offshoot in onyx wool, thriving moth most in shade, away from industry's pull. Misinterpreting the bluebird scolding as welcoming love ballad, rather than a territorial war unfolding. Escaping the perpetual static of busyness, I gaze from the boulder's precarious perch, inhaling photosynthesized happiness. Impulse.
Oh, wow, Faze. That is a stunning write. Thank you so much. And Pam, would you start us off on comments? Well, wait, no. I had Pam start off last time. Paula, would you start us off on comments?
Oh, I love this. It's just so also... also enjoying the stillness, like a sweet stillness, and that's not everyone again can do that. Whispering mystic is my ears. My goodness, how this had effect on you. So all the sensation, as you said, and trickling stream. It brings not only the sensation, but it touches subconscious, as is a subconscious fear, the roar of rabbit cascading. It's kind of as waters. That in prose, you just serenading. It's very serenading, your poem, and you give so much little description of mossy offshoot. There's no picture, but I can visualize it because so vivid your imagery. I literally can see it, and then hear it too, with the bluebird calling, welcoming love below. Wow, I'm just in love with this. Escaping the perfect static of business, I gaze from boulders, because birch and lading photosynthesized happiness. It's so true. It is, again, if you don't, this is an escape of a busy life. The moment we just sit there and grasp, look at this nature, just take us away to another place, and how much can deeply really affect us. I love it. It's just so gorgeous.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Beautiful. Well, and so I love first we have Solace, which is just this beautiful depiction of nature and capturing it in the motion of love. And yet in this, I love that there's kind of that stillness, a gentle appreciation for nature. It's that moment. It reminds me of those moments when I used to go camping, when I could go camping. And thankfully, I get to go camping again. I'm very excited about that. But going camping and just being encompassed by nature and listening to the life around it, listening to the simplicity, away from the industrial world that we have built, away from the idea that busyness is a good thing, and instead appreciating the moment for what it is, the mist trickling, possibly teasing your ears as perhaps little droplets catch on the pond of tiny hands, and the roar of the rapids that cascade down. It is almost deafening and yet so beautiful. Hearing the little birds and the frogs serenading each other, though I enjoyed the little hint that we misinterpret a bluebird's ballad as a love song because we have this idea that, oh, it sounds so beautiful. It must be something wonderful. And sometimes it is just territorial attacking, if you will. And then once more, kind of just bringing us back, inhaling this light, inhaling nature that has not been tarnished by man, that has not been adjusted to fit a flower bed, and instead appreciating it exactly as it is from your little precarious perch upon a boulder. you truly did capture the beauty, the sweetness in that stillness when we take a moment to realize that life isn't all about us and that sometimes nature is perfect as it is. It's just a stunning piece, Dave. So thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I really liked this one. I liked, like you two have mentioned, about how, I am off mute. Okay. All right, just had to check because it was so quiet. But I really like how, you talk about in that one line about misinterpreting the bluebird scolding as a welcoming love ballad rather than territorial war of unfolding. And nature, and especially birds, they have to be territorial in order to get food and place somewhere to live. And I also love the use of sound in here with the second stanza. The roar of rapids cascading softens as water slows, breathing frogs heard serenading. And wonderful use of the word photosynthesis, inhaling photosynthesized happiness, that pure joy of just standing amongst the trees and breathing life in and breathing nature in. I think you've captured that beautifully. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you so much. All right, up next we have Paper Airplane by Earth Passion. And I'll give this one a read. I fold and fold to make them fly, to get them high into the sky. Imagine they will reach your door and make you smile. If I could shrink into the size of a small fly, I'd hitch a ride upon this plane to fly to you and smile anew. Wished we both flew. End poem. And please, would you start us off on comments?
This has a beautiful whimsy to it. I really like, imagine they will reach the door and make you smile. It's like, you know, when you can't actually go be with someone, but you make something that's fun and you're kind of playing with it and you wish that you could share that moment with someone and you just imagine that you are. I think that's beautiful. And that if they were able to ride along this plane, they would smile anew, as if they haven't smiled recently, but they knew that they would be able to smile again if only they saw this person. Wished we both flew. There's something about, like, imagining that distance closing with something as innocent and sweet as a paper airplane. I really enjoy this.
Oh, that was a beautiful comment, Dave. Thank you. And you're right, it is very whimsical in its ways, and yet loving almost, loving, hopeful. So thank you for that. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like what Viviana had to say. It is whimsical and hopeful. The wonderful brevity. I like that she starts out with I fold and fold. I think that's kind of a very layered gesture in this, right? And the idea that it does, represent the making of the paper airplanes. But it also could be like, folding letters up to mail or folding in the gesture of almost like sadness or keeping yourself together because the person isn't there with you. And I have to say it's very nostalgic, too, because a couple of things that really just bring back a kind of nostalgic feel. And paper airplanes and dandelions. It so much brings back that idea of childhood and using your imagination. And I do like the wishfulness of this, the wanting to be there to enjoy the moment with the other person. It's a beautiful brevity and very well done.
Beautifully said. And I love that you even talked about it as mail, because so often we think of paper airplanes, we hear the folding and we think of paper airplanes, but you're right, people do fold up letters and send those off into the sky, if you will. And so I think that was a very fitting interpretation. So thank you for that, Pam. And Sawa, what did you think?
It reminds me of how people write also messages and put them in bottles, send them in the sea. Kind of remind me of that. But also, it has this innocence that remind me again, like Pam said, the childhood. We just pull things and enjoy. And sometimes we wish that, even when we're children, we wish it goes, it lands somewhere. That's what we used to do when I was young. Like, I wish it lands at my cousin or my, where, thinking where it's going to land. But this is specifically, there is passion, there is this longing, there is this wish to, that not only the letter gets to, or the message, or this paper to get to the one she missed, but also she wished that she fly with it. That's so beautifully and so romantic. Wish that we both flew and make him smile. How beautiful is that? I really, just the beautiful brevity. I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, that was a beautiful comment, Sola. Thank you. Especially I love that you noted that it kind of ends with that idea of I wish that we both flew, because flying is such a freeing concept, the idea that we can go where we want, see what we want, all without borders and boundaries. What really stood out to me in this piece is the care that went into it. The first stanza talking about folding and folding their words, their thoughts, their love, to let them fly. And Sala's comment actually made me think, you know, perhaps in doing this folding and they send this paper airplane off, this person has become the wind beneath their wings. They have buoyed. The plane has been buoyed because of this person. And so here they sit, folding their love, their hopes, their dreams, their words into an airplane to send it off to this person in hopes that it will make them smile as much as this person has given them the reason to smile. That if they could shrink down and hitch a ride on this plane, that they would fly to them, which suggests that they don't really get to be there all the time. And perhaps that's because of life, COVID, a long-distance relationship, what have you. Either way, they are forced to be separated, and oh, how whimsical it would be to hitch a ride upon this plane so that they can be there with them, their smile refreshed in that. And then, of course, kind of like what Sala said, the idea of both being free to fly, to float upon the wind, go where they want, reach the sky, the heavens. It's such a simple way for the poem to end, and yet it ends with such depth that really makes you stop and think and just appreciate the gentle tenderness that came with this. It's a truly stunning poem, in my opinion. So thank you for allowing us to share that earth passion. And thank you all for your beautiful, beautiful comments. Up next, we have a slightly sadder poem called Reduced to Ashes by Debbie. And Faze is right. So Pam, will you read this one for us? I didn't drop today. Nope.
I thought you said a Faziana's name.
Oh, I was originally gonna have Faze read it, but I was like, wait, Faze just read. That would be rude to make her read again. So I'm gonna have you read this one, Pam. But it does look like Sawa just left. I know that she couldn't be here for too long, so thank you, Sawa, for joining the show for as much as you could. We truly, truly appreciate it when people can call in, even if it's only for a little bit, because it's always nice to hear poets speak in their own voice. So with that being said, Pam, could you take this one away whenever you're ready?
Sure. And this is Reduced to Ashes by Debbie, and it goes like this. Our bodies reduced to ashes, our minds reduced to nothing but madness. She held her own until she couldn't. We held on until she wouldn't. Open minds bring beliefs. With open hearts we grieve. Open caskets bring sorrow. Open graves never bring tomorrow. With the eyes upon you we gaze, wondering, waiting, death it conveys. Wanting her to stay is inconceivable. That could never be feasible. Tomorrow will move on without her compassion. Our lives now reduced to ashes. We will lay her in the ground as if that's so profound. She loved us without the boundaries. When asked, she would tell you, no worries, my dear friend, you will be missed because you were so loved. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam, and a heartbreaking write by Debbie. I think what touches me so in depth is the magnitude of loss. It's not just the idea of one person who's gone, but every person. Our bodies reduced to ashes, our minds reduced to nothing but madness. She held her own until she couldn't. We held on until she wouldn't. I think what that first stanza especially really captures is the way that when we lose someone, when death takes someone from us, often we are struck by the loss. We're affected by it. We don't get out of it by ourselves just because. And it just kind of leaves us in that shell shock, that moment of uncertainty. And so there's this almost working through the grief of, well, I'm just going to get through today. This was unexpected. It's not what I wanted, but I will get through today because otherwise it's inconceivable. And so we try to find tomorrow, to learn how to live through tomorrow, even though this person is no longer with us. And of course, it ends with that touching, beautiful, she loved us without the boundaries. When asked, she would tell you, no worries. My dear friend, you will be missed because you were so loved. It leaves me speechless. Yeah, it just leaves me speechless. It's beautiful, beautiful tribute and so heartbreaking. And Faith, what did you think?
I agree that it's heartbreaking, and I like that you pointed out at the top that it's our bodies, our minds, because my favorite part came later on with a similar idea. Tomorrow we'll move on without her compassion, our lives now reduced to ashes. Without that compassion, it feels like everyone is now ashes, not just the person they've lost. And I think that impact that someone had on their friends, on their family, on their community is really felt here, as it says that everyone has become ash. That's a powerful statement.
Beautiful comment, Dave. Thank you so much. I didn't get to hear all of it, though, because Felon has called in. So if Felon wants to say hi really quickly.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Felon.
Welcome, Felon.
Hey. Can y'all hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay.
It's a little noisy, so I'm sorry.
I got to run from the hospital.
Okay.
I'm home, finally.
Oh, that's good news.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah. But I'm on my way to my boyfriend's finally. So I was going to call and say hello to everybody.
Aw, we love you. We're so glad that you could call. Are you going to stick with us for a little bit, or are you just dropping in to say
No, I'm going to stick for a minute. I mean, I don't know what the topic is or anything.
It's catching up on life.
I got something for you.
Okay, perfect. And did you get to hear this last poem by Reduced to Ashes by Debbie?
No, unfortunately, I did not get to hear it.
All right. Well, in which case, I'm going to have Pam comment. Are you safe to put yourself on and off mute, or would you like me to take care of that for you?
Yeah. I'll put it on mute.
Okay, perfect. All right. And with that being said, Pam, what were your thoughts on this piece?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is, first of all, I was very sorry to hear of her loss, but I think this is a beautiful tribute to her friend. And yeah, I like the line, our lives now reduced to ashes. The idea that, you know, when somebody dies and they are cremated and then you feel as if you have fallen apart. I also like, my dear friend, you will be missed because you were so loved. I mean, just what a beautiful emotive line from the heart, you know, to express that kind of grief and that kind of love. And I also like, she held her own until she couldn't. We held on until she wouldn't. You know, that idea of holding on to that sense of hope until that's it, it's the end. Just absolutely a heartfelt right and very well done.
Oh, Pam, that was such a beautiful comment. Thank you so much. And you're right. I mean, she has written this in such a beautiful way that it's heartbreaking in all the right ways. As someone who is getting to read their experience, it is heartbreaking because we cannot help but feel for her for that loss. So, beautiful words. And Faze, you commented on this one. So, with that, I'm going to let Felon get her piece on the board. And in the meantime, we are going to move on to Haunted by Dabbler. And Faze, would you read this one for us?
Of course. Haunted by Babbler. 5 years old, boiling spaghetti noodles, reading the directions on the back of a jar of ragu. The wraith softens in a bathtub, ringed with dead skin, stewing in broth of grief. I, alone in the dryness, fumble with a can opener crafted for larger palms. No thumbs to lick frosting from. I tuck myself in at night. Soft sobs of a ghost permeate through a thin wall, quietly wailing in despair where my mother used to sleep. The S of her name tangles, I know well from practice, the skipped U and squiggled N's, poetry and script. My teacher never saw the beauty of it, only my meager tribute, a left-handed stand-in, so as not to disturb the spirit. Some nights, the floorboards creak, and my door inches open. Hollow sockets trawl my outline, profoundly melancholic, depositing worry into my growth plates. I'm told it was my father who died, but his ghost does not haunt me. End poem.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a haunting right by Babbler. She always does have such a phenomenal way of catching the emotions in the moment to really pack a punch. So thank you so much, Babbler, for sharing this. And Pam, would you mind starting us off on comments? Did I lose you, Pam, to the mute monster?
No, I'm here. Well, first of all, I thought that was a great read. And, yeah, this is a wonderful, it's a poignant rite. I like, you know, that she opens up with 5 years old boiling spaghetti is reading the direction of the back of a jar of ragu. There's really a sense of a child that's had to take on too much responsibility. No thumbs to lick frosting from. I tuck myself in at night, soft sobs of a ghost permeate through a thin wall. It is unfortunately a sad reality that neglect happens to far too many children. It's powerful all the way through, profoundly melancholic, depositing worry into my growth plates. And then those ending lines, I'm told it was my father who died, but his ghost does not haunt me. That idea of when somebody dies and it should have meant something to you because they should have been such an important part of your life that their death emotionally haunts you. But when, unfortunately, with neglect, the thing is that person dies, it doesn't leave a hole in your heart. That hole, I mean, it was already there, so it doesn't feel any different. I think this is a powerful rite and very well done.
Beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And I, too, really liked the part where she said, Where is it? No thumbs to lick frosting from. I tuck myself in at bed. Because you're right, there are those moments where we forget the impact that people should have. Sometimes we just have to survive, and so we don't get to sit and think about how we don't have a parent offering us frosting while the mother says, no, don't do that, or any parent to confront with the other. That's a moment of conflict just because one is being the good parent and one's being the bad, so to speak, the more stubborn one, strict one. I think what really catches me here is the contrast that she's caught between the way her mother grieves and the way that she is forced to live because of it. I could not imagine what it is to lose someone that you share children with, someone that you've built a life with, and the impact that would have when the parent left is no longer able to meet that child's needs, to be there in the way that the child needs them to be, because they are stuck in the past. They're stuck in a moment that they'll never be able to recapture. And so they're kind of left with this, the child having to figure out how to make dinner, and not really good dinner, the can of ragu. And not to speak ill of anybody who likes ragu, but, you know, usually a homemade bolognese is going to taste a little bit better than something that comes from a can. And yet this child has to figure out how to survive in a world where both parents have essentially been gone. The mother is erased. She's lying soaking in the tub. While this child has to figure out how to do life without it. And, of course, the mother coming in to listen, the floorboards creaking. The father died, but the father is not the one that haunts her, because the ghost of the mother sits there watching, lamenting, and reminding her that she didn't just lose one parent. It's heartbreaking, truly heartbreaking. And it's beautiful, right? The heartbreaking. And so, what did you think?
I get a totally different read on this. For me, it's not the mother's cries, it's not the father's cries, it's your sibling's crying, because the daddy's even thinks that he shouldn't be doing to that little girl. That's what I get from it. I mean, I might be totally way off base, but they're replacing the mother with the children, and he's abusing them. And like with the ends that are scribbled with the skip use, not you, it's just this really hit me. Yeah, that's what I'm really saying about that. Very hard hitting.
Oh, so that's a beautiful comment. And it is great work that hits us in our core. So I truly, truly appreciate that, because it's not an easy one to read and to listen to. So thank you for sharing that with us. And Sage, having read it, what did you think?
I interpreted it in the way that you did, Victoria, in that it's the mother who feels like a ghost, and it's because the mother is in mourning after the loss of the father and is just not capable in her depression of properly taking care of her daughter. It's so sad. I feel for the mother who's going through this, but even more so for the child who has to experience both the loss of the father and the loss of the mother. I really love the way the bathtub is described. As the wraith is softening in the bathtub, that tells you that the mother has sat there so long, like, you know, when your feet and fingers get kind of like wrinkly, and it's just like she's been in there all day, ringed with dead skin, and stewing in a broth of grief. That broth of grief is such an intense way of saying that. I love that it points out that the can opener is crafted for larger palms. So the tiny hands are just not meant to be doing this kind of work. And it emphasizes that she's not ready to take care of herself like this. Having to forge the mother's signature on school things is how I interpret the part where it's talking about the S has this and the U has that and the N has that. She's trying to write her mother's name so nobody knows that she's all on her own. This made me cry the first time I read it. I read it about a month ago, and I was just totally like blown away by it. It has so much raw emotion, and yet the little details really express that kind of pain. It's very intense work. I really think she's a talented writer.
Oh, she absolutely is. I think that's why I'm always just amazed by her, is the way that she captures things. And she does it in a way that she's telling her story, but it's also applicable. It can be interpreted in multiple different ways, kind of like how Fel gets something different from it than you and I. But she does it in such a way that people cannot help but appreciate what she's written, touch, you know, capture it. And like you mentioned, the wraith whose skin softens in the bathtub, ringing with dead skin, you know, ringing the bathtub with dead skin. You're right, that really does show someone who's just been sitting in the bath. And personally, I connect with that. I have a boyfriend who committed suicide when I was 18. And I remember sitting in a bathtub when it first started hot because I wanted to feel that sting and my skin was red, and yet I sat in the bathtub for so long that by the time I got out, it was completely cold. And any burn that I'd gotten from the hot water initially had been cooled down to the point that you couldn't see it anymore because of how long I sat there just crying. She just has such a fantastic way of capturing these moments, as painful and as hard as they are. And yet in it, it also shows the strength of what she's gone through and lived through. So beautifully said, Faze, and a fantastic write for that one. Up next, we're going to have Last Laugh by Luke J.R. And Pam, would you give this one a read?
All right, but I expect to be paid for these $10 words. So put it on your tab.
Beer club of the month coming your way.
There you go. All right, this is Last Laugh by Luke J.R., and it goes like this. Untangled from the roots around your lungs, you may laugh, blood-soaked in a final lonesome bath, rubber ducky can laugh. Fake smiles, warm hearts, what's there not to laugh about? Fallen heroes, forgotten souls, dying left in unburied holes. What's there not to laugh about? We laugh, I laugh, you laugh, contagious jokes within every gasp. Lungs make a final grasp, trying to expand for you to laugh. There's so much joy with you, no wonder you always paint a beautiful view. Untangled from the roots around your lungs, you may laugh. Nature dying, industrial rising, natural disasters at unexpected timing. We laugh at the misery of others. We laugh at what shouldn't be funny. But that's okay. You're all fueling. You're all elevelly. That's an addiction. Contradiction. I'm aware this isn't funny. Keep it sweet like honey. For I have the last laugh. Lonesome again. Nudity, gesture, ingenuity, and poem.
Oh, beautiful read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And Fel, would you start us off on comments?
I knew you were going to call on me. I wasn't ready. You know, I wasn't ready. I was in the pool. Wasn't ready. Can you come right back to me? Sorry.
No, that's totally okay, and I appreciate I appreciate being honest, because this is a piece that really does make you stop and think, because I feel like Liz has really captured all the different things that we kind of laugh about. There's the laughing that we do when we're angry, like that, oh no, like, they did not do that, just this moment of disbelief. There's the laughing when you cry because, you know, it's just too heartbreaking that if you delve into the misery that you will never come back up. There's the laughing of being a deceit. You know, that moment when you smile even though you know you're in the wrong. There's actually a psychology for that. I'm forgetting what it's called, but there's a psychology that some people at least will smile when they're doing something that they know is wrong, not because they enjoy it, but because they just do, like a mask to kind of dissuade you or whatever. So I really appreciate this. And then, of course, at the very end, he mentions, you know, for I have the last laugh, lonesome again, nudity, gesture, ingenuity, kind of this idea that he's going to have the last laugh because he's always been kind of the comedic break of the story of life. One thing that this kind of made me think about, though, was lung cancer. The people who are cruel, the people who abuse others, the people that are just kind of toxic, this idea almost of untangling from roots around their lungs, specifically contagious jokes within every gasp, the lungs make a final gasp, the idea almost of something restricting their breath as if it is this cancer that is weaving within themselves, and he is doing maybe perhaps this kindness, you know, kill them with kindness idea, letting them have all these laughs because in the end he will be proven victorious. It's a rather interesting piece, more complex than what it might be at first look, which is why I completely understand film not wanting to go first. But it's a really intriguing piece, in my opinion. And Faith, what did you think?
I thought it was really interesting. And it seems like there's a bit of a resentment and sarcasm towards people who laugh at inappropriate times. And that's something I always feel guilty about because I tend to laugh when I'm nervous or uncomfortable or trying not to seem upset. I laugh at really inappropriate times. And I always worry about how people will feel about that, like I'm disrespecting their moment of seriousness when that's never my intention. But I just tend to laugh. It's like a defense mechanism. So, I don't know, as I was reading this, I'm like, I'm that asshole. here I do it again, I laugh. That's what I was stuck on, was like, I am that person who laughs at the time when maybe I shouldn't.
Okay, I think that was such a fantastic comment. And I have to admit, you made me giggle too when you mentioned that you are that asshole, because that was perfect. But I get it. I mean, there are those times where we do things not because we're mean-spirited, but because we just, it's what we do. We're trying to diffuse the song, what have you. I feel that because I definitely do that. I was actually talking, I kept this canvas, but Thursday we had a big team meeting kind of thing. The whole company got together and we flew in this guy who's a industrial psychologist. And I kind of was talking to another manager and I was like, you know, I don't know why we really flew in a psychologist for business consulting when as accountants we've been kind of like the first business consultants. It just seems kind of redundant. But after what happened Thursday, I told Sam, I was like, I might not have a job by the end of the year, at least not with this firm. I've got other firms that have been reaching out to me for a while. And so it's one of those things where even in this midst of huge controversy and huge conflict and contention, you know, there was a little bit of humor because it was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And so it's this inappropriate bubbliness that can sometimes come out at least for me. I can be very, very serious when I need to, but if you just meet with me one-on-one, especially at a business setting, all of a sudden I'm just like the happy, bubbly person, and it can be inappropriate, and it can be perceived as inappropriate, because then when all of a sudden you're not, people also are not prepared for it. So that was, I too am that asshole phase. Long story short, I too am that asshole. And Fallon, are you ready to comment, or would you like me to pick on Pam?
Yes, no, I'm ready. My grandmother, my dad's mother, she was just like that. I mean, I watched her as a little girl and how she would respond to things, and I was just like, what the fuck's wrong with her? And then I just kind of started really catching it, because her own insecurities and the way she was raised, and she wasn't able to adapt to certain social settings, and she would get a nervous giggle because she didn't know how to respond, so she would giggle. And as I got older, you know, I watched her even more, and it was like, you know, I never felt pity for her or anything. I just wish I could say, you know what, Grandma, just speak your mind. Just say whatever you want. Who cares? Giggling is not, you know, it's kind of like, to me, it was an easy out for her. And I just wish she would have spoke her mind to people like she did us kids and my mama and them. She sure didn't tell her much. She looked around to them and didn't giggle. She told them what she thought. But I wish she had done that with other people in settings. I think she would have been received a whole lot better. But it my sister does it too. So, but it is it's just a click or a niche that some people do, and it helps them get through certain things. And that's the next. It's an excellent right.
Comment. So you say you weren't ready, and then you pull that out of your back pocket. But you're right. There definitely was a time frame where women didn't speak their mind, and they were supposed to act and behave a certain way. You know, kind of how kids used to be seen and not heard. You know, so some of that today. But I think that was a fantastic comment, because there are people who can be perceived as inappropriate. It can be perceived as, you know, negative, any kind of negative perception, all because they giggle, even if they're trying to be serious, because, again, it's kind of that diffusing thing. So that was a beautiful comment.
Thank you.
What did you think?
Well, first of all, I do want to mention that you sound like you're really far away in a tunnel, like backside of a tunnel. So I don't know if you need to adjust your headset, Victoria. But thought I'd mention that. I really like this. It's a relatable right in the idea that, you know, we all have those uncomfortable moments that we laugh or giggle at. And there are those moments where in times of sadness and anger and darkness, we have to, you know, find that laughter. That laughter comes because we just don't know what else to do. Trying to expand for you to laugh. There's so much joy with you. No wonder you always paint a beautiful view. And I think there's kind of a bit of spite to that, and the idea that, you know, the message of, you know, ignorance is bliss. If we ignore the problems going on in the world, then, yeah, it's easy to laugh. Just an excellent write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. And hopefully I sound better. I've taken my headset off completely, so now
you do sound better.
I have a speakerphone, and hopefully it works. Oh, good. So I missed some of your comment because I was adjusting, taking the speakerphone off, putting the speakerphone on, taking the Bluetooth off. But from what I did hear, it was a beautiful comment. So thank you for that. And I do see that we now have a poem from Phil. So, Fel, I'm going to post this up, and if you could read it for me, I would appreciate it.
Not a problem. Let me get to it. Sorry. Okay. I got to refresh it again. Huh? Where you go? Oh, here we go. It's called Toxic Clouds by Me Fallon. Haze is an itch the night can't seem to scratch. City built on sin, actions painted black. Stone tumbleweeds ramble the roads to nowhere. flesh is stripped to the bone and passed bare. Fuel bleeding toxic or only fears flaming right. Acidic flavor lies heavy to a tongue's bite. Butane was once a bliss to an addict's sucking lips. Fire in the city skies drift until the next urge wants a hit. End point. And this is on the prompt, the broken city, die like butane on my skin. End point.
Fantastic, fantastic. Was this another 5-minute masterpiece that you tend to do?
Yeah, I wrote it for Pam's show, but that wasn't for that show. Well, we're not going to hold the show, yeah. So I didn't read it.
Oh, that is amazing. Oh, so you found such like this masterpiece, this mad skill of writing 5-minute masterpieces. Like, you know, it takes me a little bit to sit down. I might get the first couple lines in my head, but it always takes me a bit to write. And so I was just like, oh, you're talking about serial killers? You know, I've got a piece I can write. And it's just like, oh, mad skill, my dear, mad skill. And Pam, will you start us off on comments?
Yeah, I'm glad that Fallon was able to read this one tonight and that she had been inspired by the lines that have been provided. And this is very cool. And what I like about this is that it, with just a few lines, it touches on so much of the toxicity of life, the toxicity of addictions, those who use their tongue in acidic-type ways. There's really just a sense of a city, a life of people falling apart until they've lost their humanity. And excellent brevity and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you.
Oh, that was a great comment, Pam. And I love how you said that it's kind of how people are losing their humanity, because I can see that. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I think that losing humanity comment makes sense with the stripped bone and passed bare. It's like you've lost those pieces of yourself. Stone tumbleweeds is a really interesting thing to me, because tumbleweeds tend to be like, I picture, I've never actually seen one, like flimsy pieces of brush. So for stone tumbleweed to be there and rambling on the roads, that's a fascinating image to me. I like that fuel is bleeding toxic. The combination of the fuel and bleeding is really cool. And I love the ending. Fire in the city skies drifts until the next urge wants a hit. That's a powerful ending.
Thank you. When everybody comments, I will kind of tell what it means, if that's okay.
That's okay. And that was a beautiful comment, Dave. I actually have to say, though, I'm going to digress a second, because I used to live in an area aptly named the Dry Shitties. It rhymes with dry shitties, and it's a dry place. And last summer, they have windstorms where I used to live. They, in Washington, they have these windstorms over in the Horse Heaven Hills. And it gets up to over 100-mile-an-hour winds just because it's wind, not because we're having, you know, a hurricane or anything. It's just wind. And it blew so many tumbleweeds across the highway, because it's so dry, that cars were actually buried beneath it, and they had to send rescue workers out after the wind stopped. And so it kind of made me giggle, because I loved that idea, too, of stone tumbleweeds. And yet, here are these flimsy, dry brush that buried cars and actually stranded over 20 people just because of how many there were. Because, you know, one or two, it's whatever. But when it's an apocalypse of tumbleweeds, it's an apocalypse of tumbleweeds. I think what really struck with me on this is kind of the idea of addiction. That idea, a haze is an itch that I can't seem to scratch. Flesh is stripped to the bone and passed bare. Fuel bleeding, toxic. Acidic flavor lies heavy to the tongue bites. Butane was once a bliss to an addict sucking lips. Byron cities, it to me really speaks about destruction. Be your addiction drugs, or be your addiction pain, or be your addiction gambling or work or what have you. It is all self-destructive. We can always say that, you know, oh, no, it's fine. I can take care of it another day, or what have you. No, I'm only going to work another 2 hours, and then you're there for another seven as a work addict myself. This really speaks to the destruction that it comes with any kind of addiction, no matter how we try to paint it, and the way in which it slowly erodes our lives, and the excuses being removed from each act, how we will often kind of have the reasons for why we do things, and yet they don't really hold any substance when it really comes down to it. So I appreciate this piece because it reminds us of the destruction, the apocalypse that kind of comes when we make these decisions and fall into these lifestyles. So really fantastically written, Belle. But do tell us what it was about, because I always love to hear how wrong I am. I truly do.
No. You touched it. I mean, I don't hide it, and I'm not ashamed of my past. I used to have a methamphetamine addiction. I think that's very light compared to the shit I've been through in my life. I think it kind of helped me not kill some people or stuff like that and be in prison for the rest of my life. But it did take a hold of me for 18 months, and I have friends that are still out there on it and everything. But the haze in the night, it is that thing you just can't scratch. It's that you no matter how long you stay off of it, you still are going to have that urge. And then the city bill and our sins painted black. That's, from the fire burning the bowl and burning the junk, the dope, and everything else. It's that burn. It, no matter if you're inhaling it or whatever, it's the burn of what it does to you for the rest of your life. And then the stone tumbleweeds is those who pass due to addiction. And they just ramble along the roads. I mean, their memories just fly through the night. People don't even care, but yet they're gone. And to me, they meant something. And some people just didn't care. And then flesh stripped to the bare, to the bone, and past that, it takes everything that you are, and it just manifests to its own liking of, making its own skin. And then fuel, bleeding, toxic, or the fierce flaming light. And that's, you don't want to do what you do, but it's that flame, it's that heat under your calling, or that craving that you have, and the acidic flavors is that of the taste of the dope or whatever, that, and you just wind up biting the side of your mouth saying, I'm white knuckle it, I'm just going to get through it. And then the butane was once a bliss. An addict has some butane, man, you're going to be all up all night long. And but the fire in the city sky drifts into the next urge as a hit. And I'm not going to say that I don't have fleeting thoughts. I do. And I keep it real, and I tell on myself when I do. And I think that this is what this is about. And I've seen that prompt, and I was like, whew, that just, I mean, it take me maybe 2 minutes to write this because it was already clinging to my mouth. So thank you, Pam, for that prompt. It's something I really needed at that moment.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you for sharing that.
And that was a fantastic, fantastic explanation. I love that, specifically even the tumbleweed still, I love how you mentioned that often they just kind of keep on rolling, but they're heavy because, you think of anybody who struggles with addiction or has addiction. I have an uncle who has been on heart medicine for a very long time because throughout my entire life and even my dad's life, he was constantly drinking alcohol, and he partied. Even to this day, he won't visit. If he comes to where my parents live, he doesn't visit them. He stops by to say hi and then goes drinking with his buddies. He's an alcoholic. And your stone tumbleweeds, even though my uncle has not died, his decisions kind of are that stone tumbleweed that has been affecting my cousin, his son, his whole life. not too long ago when my cousin was 18, he got high and drunk and drove a car through somebody's house and stopped within feet of the owner's bed in the middle of the night because he wanted snacks, munchies. And it's gotten to the point where we weren't sure if my cousin was going to live to see 30. He has now, and he's successful, but the only way that he's been able to stay sober, and after four rehab visits in his life already, the only way he's been able to stay sober is because this last rehab said, what do you need to do to stay sober? And he says, well, I have to live a very specific way. And so he leaves his son, he's married to a nurse that he met while in rehab, but he leaves his child, he leaves my first cousin once removed, with family and goes off to Cancun to go drinking. And so your Stone Tubbleweed, speaking of addiction, too, don't remind me just of this idea of people dying, but also of the effect that it just continues to roll and continues to go downhill.
Yeah, and when you meet somebody in rehab, that's just fixing one addiction with another, and that's in a person. It's very simple.
Exactly.
Keep it simple, stupid, and don't quit the small stuff, and everything's the small stuff, and you don't have to get high over nothing. There's nothing that you have to get high over.
Yep.
But that's what I live by.
Yeah. Well, and that's the unfortunate thing about my cousin is that his wife was the nurse that took care of him in rehab. And so the argument they've had through their whole relationship was, oh, well, you know, she'll help me stay sober. She'll help me stay sober. But really she's become an enabler to allow him to live just on the cusp of the cliff. And
oh, yeah.
In my opinion, it's a ticking time bomb, but you know, what can I do besides love and support at this point? Because they're not going to listen to us. So, but thank you for that call. That was a truly fantastic break.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to have to go, guys, because I just got into Memphis, and this is not a good area. Not a good area.
No worries. You have a good night. Thank you for calling in and hanging with us
all
for
right.
a bit.
Love you guys. Okay. Good night. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right. So... Well, that was nice to talk to Fel, even if it's just for a little bit. Up next, we're going to have a piece by Poetic Picasso, which is The Flute of Our Romance. And I will take this read. Within the softness of the field
Doesn't
of lush poppies.
Doesn't he have a SoundCloud?
He does, but I don't think it got uploaded.
Are you sure? Because I swear I saw it, but okay.
Oh, no, you're right. He does. Okay, I'm not going to take this piece. Pam is going to save the day. And this is Frank in his own words.
My beloved Radha, it is I, Krishna. Within the softness of the fields of lush poppies, I am intoxicated by the smell of a fragrance as we embrace in the warmth of our passion deep into the caresses of the nectar of honeysuckles. We feed our mouths bits of the honeydew melons and read the terse aphoristic verses of the Kama Sutra under the exotic canopy of a blossoming bliss unfolded beside the naked currents flowing of the gushing milk. I am enchanted by the spell of tantric intimacy, where a body sings the harmonies of desires, when I touch a golden ornament in fine threads, wrapping myself in the seduction of the red shade of your tempting sari with your bangles and pyrrhos. My turban covers the bosom of your excitation, drinking the aphrodisiac of the honey of eroticism, submerged within the exploration of its taste, discovering the sensual effects of the mythy seeds, We sprinkle ourselves in the arousal of cinnamon, in spices and saffron, amidst the open buds of the fresh petals of poppies, lost air in the aesthetics of the poetry of the Thumri, recited in the beauty of Sanskrit. Drifting into the Kama Sutra of the magical place of lovers, as I have reached a crescendo of the flute of our romance, and our bodies delight in the sounds of lyrical notes when our music creates the symphony of lovemaking. Of lovemaking.
Well, that was a steamy poem. Whew. I don't think this show was quite ready for that. But wow, fantastic, fantastic. Write and read by Frank, a.k.a. Poetic Picasso. And Pam, since you saved the day, because I completely missed that, would you mind sharing your thoughts to start off with?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, a beautiful recording. I really enjoyed the background music. This wonderful opening, within the softness of the fields of lush poppies, I am intoxicated by the smell of a fragrance. You know, I like that, the idea of mentioning the softness of the poppies, and then, but also, you know, mentioning that they are addictive, they are intoxicating. I like the nectar of honeysuckles, we feed our mouths bits of the honeydew melons and read the terse aphrodisiac verses of the Kama Sutra. There's such a sharing of the senses in this, you know, the drinking, the food, the touching, the tasting, the very sensual acts of just appreciating each other's company and appreciating the taste of the food. We sink ourselves in the arousal of cinnamon, spices, and saffron. And I like that he went with those different spices and brought in that sense of, smell. Absolutely just a beautifully crafted poem and very well done.
And you're right. He really does have a fantastic way of bringing in the senses. Even, especially that sense of smell, the poppies, even the spices that he mentioned, they have very fragrant notes to themselves. So that was a beautiful comment. Thank you. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I have to agree with Pam that the use of the food to activate the senses was really smart. And I've never thought of cinnamon as sensual before, but I really liked the way that he incorporated that as we sprinkle ourselves in the arousal of cinnamon. There's something really sexy about the way that he wrote that. This was a very sensual piece, and I too loved that there was the music in the background. That was cool.
Absolutely. This actually reminded me of Pam's recent contest that she did, what was it, last week, Pam?
Yeah, actually, this write was on that show.
I'm
glad it was on this one. It was, but I'm glad it was on this one because it happened to be one of those writes where my son had woken up and I had to cut my comment short. So I was really happy for the opportunity to be able to comment on it again.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I'm glad Frank submitted it to this show, and so I'm glad that he did because he's kind of left me stuttering. he has such a fantastic way of weaving his words together. And so I feel like it really did remind me of your show, not in a bad way, which, you know, very good thing, but it just is such a fantastic way that he weaves it through, because I really do get that sense of touch, the sense of smell, the sense of taste. And then, of course, he had his own inflections within his performance that gave you even the sense of sound. And he, with all of that, it allows us to kind of be drawn into this. I love the way that he kind of brings in the Hindu culture into this. The spices tend to be pretty much from them, saffron being a spice that is extremely hard to cultivate. It's the hardest spice in the world to gather. And so even like a small little gram of true saffron is thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. And so to sprinkle such a spice upon your lover, so to speak, is to me a true reflection of what you are willing to give to them. So often we will talk of the luxury of roses and gold and diamonds, and yet here he has used saffron, of all things, saffron. I love that he brought in the idea of poppies, because poppies is what, if I recall, is what opium comes from. And so this is someone who is encompassing all your senses and taking you off into this own world of moments and imagery and touch and feel that is not just reality, is the hyper-reality, the feeding each other honeydew melon. And I love that he specifically picked honeydew melon because, you know, if I get in a fruit salad, I'm kind of like, eh. But it has that beautiful sweetness, the melon that when it's kind of room temperature instead of cold, like you get in those fruit salads, it just has a gentle, soft but firmness to it, which is almost mimicking another part of the male physique. And so, you know, drinking the dew from those bits, the soft refreshment of the sweet juices, it's just a really intoxicating.
Victoria?
All right. Well, I'm going to guess Victoria has dropped and will be back shortly. We should probably let her know she's dropped. Let's see. Was this one you had already commented on, Afasiana? I'm sorry for not knowing.
Yes, I have.
Okay. I think she'll be back shortly. I really don't want to move on to a next right. I have to say, I really like the diversity in rights for tonight, how a wide range of emotions have been covered.
It's true. I it's been a roller coaster of feelings. It really has.
It has, yes.
I like that because sometimes, you know, if everything is sad, I can't handle it. And there's often depth in the dark ones that I enjoy, but it's nice to have the variety of feelings that we get to experience and feel the contrast.
Absolutely.
I'm back,
absolutely.
Guys. I caught
Welcome
it. I caught
back.
It right as it happened. I'm so angry, guys. I thought I was going to have a good night where it wasn't going to make me drop or some stupid nonsense like that, and nope. 30 minutes to the end of the show. What does my phone do? It gives up on life.
We always expect it, but then, you know, we just chit-chat and knowing that eventually you'll come back. At least you're in the middle of reading your long poem.
Oh, yeah, I am thankful for that. Oh, my gosh. Well, since I came on to Faith talking about dark stuff, how about we reach her sad submission for the night. So, Faye, would you mind reading this next poem for us?
Sure, if you have time for everyone else. I just wasn't sure what to submit, so I gave you options. Okay.
Well, we've only got a few poems left, so I think yours is perfect. Just saying.
Okay. 215 Tragedies by Afasiana. shameful truths unearthed close to home, genocide that was brushed aside. It sounds foreign, staggering to be in proximity to hate. It sounds ancient, but it was happening in my lifetime. Bones of 215 children found, lives destroyed to wipe out their culture. 215 murdered or neglected at a school that was to save them by stripping them of their language, by stealing their true names, by cutting their beautiful hair, choking on force-fed assimilation, starved, beaten, and forgotten by those who claimed to be more civilized. 215 prove the stories of those who lived. 215 that warn us more are buried. Our hearts break for these shattered families. End poem. I don't know if you guys get Canadian news, so do you want me to give context for this?
I know that we've seen the mass graves, but do tell us.
There were in the past residential schools in Canada where Indigenous people had their children sent to learn the European ways of the colonizers. And they were often, the children were taken without their family's consent and put in these places so they would learn how to fit into the colonized Western world. And recently, I think 2 weeks ago now, very close to where I live, they found when they were remodeling the area that there was a mass grave of children at one of these schools where they found 215 bodies of children. And it's suspected that the schools that are all over the place from that have similar burials. So it's just, it's been something that my community has been really grieving to acknowledge that this has happened. It was known that bad things happened, but it's unbelievable that 215 children were found. It's been on my mind, so I wrote about it.
Honestly, I'm really glad you did, because where we're at least where I'm at, we hear about it, but we don't really hear about it. America is facing an issue with our Indigenous people, and the number of women in the Indigenous community that go missing, and people just don't care, that babies are literally stolen from these people, and it's not even blinked at. And some of the consequences of it, it's horrifying. So I'm glad that you spoke about this, because it is important, not just, especially in a world right now, again, at least in America, where we're starting to reevaluate the way that we have treated people, the way that we have approached people, especially those that are not of European descent. I think that it's important. I've kind of joked with a few of my friends. I don't usually talk too much about my personal life, but my husband is from Puerto Rico. My in-laws are Puerto Rican, and my in-laws joined the military. My mother, my father-in-law, really, joined the military to get off the island. And there's even misinformation when it comes to Puerto Ricans, because people assume that if they're Hispanic, that they're not Americans. And there's such a huge animosity against Hispanics in the United States because of the United States-Mexican border. And we've joked that our daughters are lucky, because my daughters can pass as white. I have dark green eyes. My husband has stone gray eyes. So our daughters have these light brown hair. They have this sun-kissed skin, and they both have either blue eyes or gray eyes. So if you look at them, you don't really realize that they're Hispanic. And I'm so pale that even though my husband is fairly dark, He's definitely a brown man. Even though he's so dark, our daughters are not that dark. They tan really, really well, but for the most part, they're just sun-kissed is what they look like. And it is unfortunate that we live in a world where, even though America has indigenous people in the sense of Native Americans and the Puerto Rican island, we still mistreat them. We still allow things to happen to them because for whatever reason, we've decided that they are lesser. And so I am glad that you write about this because it is so easy for these things to happen and for us to not care about it until something like this happens. If we had been doing our due diligence, if Canada had been doing their due diligence, if people had done what they were supposed to do, this would not have happened. This should not have happened. And yet, 215 tragedies, which is perfect the way that you say that, 215 tragedies happened. And it didn't even become known until they decided to remodel something. And you can't sit but help and wonder how. And so I love this poem because it really ruminates upon this. It forces us to sit and think, how did we allow this to happen? How did no one see what was going on? How did these families get ignored 215 times? And the terrifying thing about that is that those are the 215 that we know of. And it begs the question of if there are more that we just don't know of yet. It's terrifying. And so I really, really do appreciate you sharing this because I do think that it is important that people really stop and think that just because it doesn't affect them, that their lack of action, their lack of care is just as damning as the people that did this. The mentality that the people that did this had. These people don't matter. So thank you, Faith, truly for sharing this. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just absolutely a powerful and poignant right, and it is horribly said. It is something that needs to be grieved, needs to be heard. And I think that is one of our most important things we can do as poets, is speak out, you know, let people know about these grievous things that have happened, about families that have been shattered and hurt and broken, and people who have been told that what they are isn't right. Just to me, to be told that what you are, who you were born to be, is such an emotional abuse. And I think it's a wonderful. I think it's so sad that this happened, and you know this. But I think it's a wonderful thing that Afasiana has written about it. So excellent, right there, Afasiana, and very well done.
Thank you.
Beautifully said, Pam. And again, I cannot agree more. I am so glad that you did write about this, and that you did submit it to the show because. Speak of the hearts of LNP, and this is definitely something that I think should weigh on more of our hearts. And so I can't say enough. Thank you for sharing this, truly. All right, up next, we have How It Must Look by Versus Goliath. And Pam, would you mind giving this a read?
I would be happy to. All right, and... How It Must Look by Versus Goliath, and it goes like this. Scarred flesh and legs weary from walking, the man suffering worn like a badge, smiling all along the way and dancing to a beat only he heard, only he cared for. Positive reinforcement was every sentiment, clear as summer Vegas sky and just as warm. His intentions were invested in others' success. Winning in personal growth that goes unnoticed, like a tree that grows for 100 years, providing shade from ecosystem beneath any outer deformity, a symbol of change representing his willingness to sacrifice. As the Bolshevtava readily gave his flesh to eat in the form of a rabbit to Shakira, so too does the man look for opportunity to give himself for the benefit of others, bettering self for the gain of beloveds, learning self to retain patient love, forgiving self to be worthy of praise, accepting self so all can be accepted. A man walks, but sometimes more carries him. Something more carries him. A man is scarred, bruised, and beaten badly. He notices only the pain in others seeing him, not hiding his ailments, but smiling through. Persevering as severe of circumstances as humanely possible, endearing gleefully, knowing each moment, each dull thought of his dancing brings him closer to home. End poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much. And a fantastic write by Versus Goliath. And Faith, would you mind speaking about this first?
I liked the line, any outer deformity, a symbol of change. That's interesting. I like the end, too. Knowing each moment, each dull thud of his feet dancing, bring him closer to home. There's something about that, trying to get home and feeling positive about it, even if it's a struggle for him to walk, and it sounds like it is. His body is not in great shape, but he's seeing other people's pains before his own, and he's not hiding his pain. I like that. He's not hiding his ailments. He's not pretending that everything is okay, but he's still enjoying life despite it and caring for others. You know, there's a difference between, like, pretending everything's happy and being, like, overly positive, like that toxic positivity where you can't show anything that's wrong, because that's not healthy either. But this shows an optimism while also recognizing your pain. I liked that.
That was a beautiful comment. And I agree. There is kind of that recognizing our pain that is weaving throughout this. This to me really speaks of growth, self-growth. The idea, where was it? His intentions were invested in other success, winning in personal growth that goes unnoticed. Oftentimes when we work to better ourselves, other people really aren't going to know it, because people aren't paying attention really to what we do. Even our spouses, you can try and better yourself for them, and they don't see it. They don't care, or it's just they didn't connect the dots. Since I've already spoken about him on this show, my husband thinks I'm neurotic because I'm the kind of person where I like actionable items. So if I'm unhappy, I'm going to let him know, and I'm going to tell him what he can do to help me do better. And likewise, if he has a problem, then I want to know what he can do, what I can do to be better. And so this kind of reminded me of a bickering that he and I had a few weeks ago, really. And it started actually a month ago, because I'm in the middle of tax season, and I said, you know, I'm exhausted. I have too much stuff on my plate. I need you to help me. And I feel like I'm kind of doing this alone. And he made the comment that he too felt like he was alone. And I said, okay, so what can I do to help you? And he goes, well, I need you to do two chores a night, which is frustrating to me, because it's like, you know, I come home, I clean, I cook, I put the kids to bed, I bathe them, I help them with their teeth. Like, how many more chores do you want me to do? But I said, fine, I'll do two more chores a night. And so I did two more chores every night on top of all of that. And after about a month and a half and him not stepping up to the plate, I was like, well, what's going on? And he goes, well, I just, you know, I'm struggling. And I was like, well, I've taken on two more chores, like you said, and it's not gotten any better. And he goes, you really did that. He goes, I noticed that you were doing that, but I didn't connect that, because I told you to do that, that you would do that. And I was like, I did. And he goes, well, you're the only person crazy enough in this world to do that. I was like, yes, I am. And this reminded me of that. It reminded me of the pursuit to help others. It reminds me that oftentimes I do things for my husband, not necessarily expecting things back immediately. I do things for other people unconditionally, because I don't believe that you do things to get things in return typically. It's nice when it happens, but if you're constantly expecting to be repaid, it's just not going to happen. And so I connect with this piece because oftentimes you can give yourself to others. You can give your time. You can give your money. You can give your attention. You can give your affection. You can give a lot of things to other people because you are working on bettering yourself. And sometimes you work on being selfless. And oftentimes when people do not see the big picture, how much you give, sometimes it can just feel like you give a lot and yet very little is ever returned. Even praise, thanks, don't often come readily because soon people just get kind of accustomed to this new behavior. And so I appreciate towards the end where he says, a man walks, but sometimes something more carries him. A man is scarred, bruised, and beaten badly. He notices only the pain in others, seeing him, not hiding his ailments, but smiling through. People will often see someone who has worked to better themselves, and that person is hurt. They are hurting, but they don't charge others for it. They accept it as it is. And I think that society has taught us in many ways that if we're hurting, we have a right. That if we're offended, we have a right. That, you know, if we just don't like something, we have a right. And yet there is something to be said about people who don't always make that fuss. Sometimes it's just about persevering for circumstances and not expecting someone else to fix it. And it's nice when they come and they do. But appreciated this poem because it gave us that reminder, that sacrifice, that being kind and being loving doesn't always come with rewards in return, that sometimes it just comes with a smile at your circumstances, even though they suck. So anyway, that was kind of a wordy, convoluted comment, but it's a fantastic piece. So thank you for that versus Goliath. And Pam, having read it, what did you think?
Well, first of all, that was an excellent comment. I really appreciated the personal touch that you added. I really like how this is about bettering yourself and, making your life better, making yourself better, and not necessarily worrying about the outside world. I really like the line, persevering as severe circumstances is humanely possible, enduring gleefully. The idea of just, going through something that, is oftentimes, things can be easily hidden or people, say you're not going through as difficult times as you think you are. And the inside, but people don't because they see a smile. I really like this all the way through. I think it's a powerful write and very well done.
That was a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you so much. You reminded me of something that I kind of live by. And let me digress first. It was a powerful write or powerful comment because you are right. There are many times that people go through things and others don't know because we see that external face. We see that smile. And we assume that they're fine. We assume that, life is what it should be. And so I appreciate that. It reminded me of the idea that I live by, which is hard is hard. What is hard for me is not hard for others. And what is hard for others might not be hard for me. But in the end, all of it's valid. Whatever is hard for a person doesn't mean that it's less just because to me it isn't. And so sometimes we have to have that compassion to let other people live their hard, even if we don't understand it. So thank you for that comment, Pam. That was fantastic. All right. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. So I'm actually going to share a piece that I wrote. And then we'll finish off the show with you guys. Let me know what's going on with you this week. So this one is called While Zombies Watch the Circle Spin. I'm far too coherent to be in this hazy room where the air tastes of stale smoke and smells of liquid filtered of its flavor through pores that miss today's shower. Prayer in C plays overhead, upbeat, contrasting the desperate pleas whispered beneath hushed breath, eavesdropped as I walk an aisle of rainbow neon lights. Bells ringing a win, trying to cover the disappointment that it wasn't a big enough bid to cover the growing losses. The drunk victory cry of the midnight hour, surprisingly awake with crushed hopes. Button pushing, frantic to catch the winning spin, while more buttons are pushed upon a dim screen, hoping there is enough left to recoup the losses or pay the bills that never seem to stop. Vibrant, these halls are filled with carved wood, bronze metal, boasted about in elvish tales, yet the characters don't fit the setting or the tone. Poverty shrouded in wealth and the thrill of a chance. Yesterday's rocker Barbie seated at the poker table, one more drink to etch her age upon her skin. A polished man now struggling to put his card in the slot. The player's circle, perks of addiction. I cannot help but try to catch their eyes, passing beneath raindrop chandeliers, watching the dim, sad hope in eyes filled with growing desperation. Childlike, meek, a woman walks across my path, her mind lost to the puppet master that gleefully stacks the odds in their favor, keeping them hooked with a $3 win for every 100 spent. End poem. And Pam, would you leave comments?
Absolutely. Wonderful read there, Victoria. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really like the part where you're describing the people. Poverty shrouded in wealth and the thrill of a chance. Yesterday's rocker Barbie, and then you're talking about the man with he can't get his card in the slot because he's too drunk to even do that. So should he be making decisions about his money? And the way that you describe the woman, one more drink to etch her age upon her skin. That etching of her age is such a strong description, both physically and metaphorically, I think. This reminds me a lot of an episode of the TV show Angel, which is a spinoff of Buffy, because there was this demon running a casino, and he had everyone kind of hypnotized where they were basically zombies who just kept gambling and gambling and gambling. And you couldn't even talk to them. Like, if you try to talk to anyone at the casino, they'd go, you got to play to win. And it was, like, the only thing that they could say. And it was definitely, I think, a critique of real people getting stuck in this cycle. I think this is a powerful poem in talking about real issues of addiction. Well done.
Absolutely.
Thank
I have
you,
to
Kay.
Agree. And I like how layered this is. I like how it works well as a zombie apocalypse type write. And yet it does touch on those real addictions. And not just drug addiction, but gambling addiction. I remember going to a casino one time and just watching when people just sit there for like over an hour or more, just pulling that lever and putting coins in and pulling that lever. And just all for the maybe of getting something. You know, a polished man now struggling to put his card in the slot. They cannot help but try to catch their eyes passing beneath raindrop chandeliers. And what I really like about that line, I cannot help but try to catch their eyes, is you have this person who lives within this, it's the hero of the story, but the hero in a quiet way, that the person who feels there must be some good beneath everything that's happening. And so just a wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam and Faith. I actually wrote this part of my Thursday thing. I had to be at a casino. I don't know why. As accountants, we picked to meet at a casino, but we did. So I was stuck there overnight by myself, going in from Wednesday into Thursday night, and it is not my element. And I was so incredibly uncomfortable, especially walking around. And says what you said, kind of how that guy was so drunk, he probably shouldn't be making decisions with his money. that's exactly how it feels. It feels like this puppet master pulling strings and people getting to make decisions that are life-altering, all while intoxicated in ways that they shouldn't be. It was hard to watch because I've seen the consequences of this lifestyle. I've seen the people who go and try and make a living off of this. And that's not to say it's all bad. I used to work with an accountant who had a poker championship ring, but I've seen just as much good, but the bad outweighs it. And so when it's not approached right, it's a terrifying thing. So I appreciate both of your guys' comments because it was therapeutic to write. So appreciate that. All right, we've got 10 minutes left of the show. So Faith, would you mind telling us what you're doing this week?
Sure. For Part Sinner, Part Saint, we're using Babbler's Contest, and it's about grit. So we have, I think, 6 quotes that have the word grit in them, 7 quotes, pardon me, and that is going to be our show for, it's Saturday morning, but I always think of it as Friday night. The after midnight that stretches between Friday and Saturday is going to be a celebration, not celebration, but exploration of grit and what that means to different people.
Oh, that sounds like it'll be super, super exciting. And then for people who don't know, be sure to check out the contest by LNP members that is always in our group, because you can find these contests there. And what are you guys doing by chance for Double Helix?
There's no Double Helix this week, but we are going to be the next Double Helix, which is the following week, going to be writing to the quote, "Everything that irritates us about others can lead to an understanding of ourselves," by Carl Jung.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to be fantastic. And so we've got plenty of time to write for that one, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like it's going to be a fantastic one. So I will make sure to check that one out. And Pam, what have you got going on?
Let's see. Rex's After Midnight show on Tuesday is open after midnight and carryovers. So there's no contest, but there's a topic board up. Then this week we have Into the Darkness. Rex is running the contest for this week's Into the Darkness, which is basically like, what do you see? You bring the topic, just make it a dark light. But I would also like to mention that 2 weeks from this Friday is another Into the Darkness show that Afasiana will be joining me and Rex on, because that, and I'm running that contest. And that one we are asking for people to write stories that you might hear over, like, on the radio, like back in the 1930s, 1940s, dark, spooky, and then make a recording of it. So I mentioned both just because sometimes if people are new to recording and they need extra help, it's good for them to know ahead of time. Twisted Tuesdays on Tuesday at 10 p.m. this week, the contest is already filled, but it just so happens to be Oceans Day, a day where we not only celebrate, but pay attention, learn about ocean conservation. And so the topic board is up, and of course any right that has to do with oceans and ocean conservation is always welcome. And I know, just keep an eye out, like you said, on contests done by late night poets, hosts and hostesses. Keep an eye on the topic board, because we always have plenty going on.
Absolutely. And I will definitely have to check out both of those. I have to say, though, there was once upon a time we spoke about doing a dark show together, Pam, that may or may not have involved serial killers. So I'm just waiting on your call for that one, my dear. I'm just saying.
Oh, yep. We have to, yeah, that is definitely on the list.
And then we do have next week, we're going to have the Black Lace Diaries. Doing a little bit of a lighter topic, we're just going to be talking about dirty talk or pillow talk. So be sure to check out that contest that is up and running right now. And for Strange Magic After Midnight, which is our Thursday morning, I agree with Faze, it feels more like a night show, but our Thursday morning after midnight show, we are going to be actually looking at the big fin squid, which if you want to talk about a creepy creature, that would be it. It definitely has inspired some Cthulhu-esque creatures, but be sure to check it out. Write what it makes you feel. Write what you think when you see it. Perhaps it even inspires what else could be hidden in the depths of our oceans. So with that, I am going to call it a night. Thank you, Pam, Faze, Felon, Salwa, for calling in. Frank, I'd like to send a special thanks out to for sending in that SoundCloud. We do always love when poets are able to provide their pieces in their voice. Even if they can't call in, being able to have that in their voice lets us really hear how it was intended from them, which always just gives some beautiful, beautiful depth. And then, of course, to all the poets that allowed us to share their work, we could not do these shows without you guys. So thank you, everyone who called in, who allowed us to read your rights, provided those SoundClouds, because they really do make a difference. Until next week, then, good night.